Okay, we are going to get started. So White Whale Bookstore is thrilled and honored to help Joan E. Bauer and Christopher Collins virtually host the 2021 Hemingway Summer Poetry Series. And our lineup for week 7 features John Grahalski, Yona Harvey, Emily Moen Slate, William Taylor Jr., and Laurie Wilson. And I was telling the poets before I let all of you in, I've been looking forward to this reading for so long. So many like mad women and, you know, just fabulous, like really important, like Pittsburgh and Appalachian writers are here tonight. So please, I am just like so just thrilled to host it. So thank you to Joan and Chris for putting this together. And thank you so much to all of our readers. I'm just so happy to be the host. You can tell I'm just overfilled with joy. So just a little bit about myself and White Whale quickly. I'm Halsey, the virtual events assistant at White Whale Bookstore. And White Whale Bookstore is a family-owned general interest independent store located in the Bloomfield neighborhood of Pittsburgh. And as some of you might know, this is, I'm taking a bit of a step back because I'm moving to Miami for graduate school. So I will not be the regular face in the virtual series of White Whale, but I will be here every so often. So I will be around, just not so much here as much. So I will miss all of you. And it's been such a pleasure to be the MC, especially over the pandemic. Just thanks for receiving me. So yeah. Currently through August, White Whale is taking a mini summer break from workshops and events because we've got lots of other things to work on. And have you heard, we're expanding into our building storefront next door, but we've still got a handful of fantastic virtual readings and conversations lined up for the month of August, and we're open for browsing, curbside pickup, and shipping. Stay tuned for our fall events, which includes workshops plus several great launches and readings back in the store. And you can find out all about those things on our website, which is whitewhalebookstore.com. And then a few events coming up we think you might be interested in, especially if you're here tonight. On July 28th at 7 p.m. Eastern time, we're delighted to welcome back Marcel Vera in celebration of the paperback release of her novel, The Taste of Sugar. We loved getting to be a part of her launch last year with Pittsburgh Arts and Lectures. And this July, she'll be joined by writer and professor Jennifer Maritza McCauley for a reading and conversation. Then on July 29th at 7 p.m. Eastern time, we're thrilled for a virtual poetry reading with Catherine Pond, author of Field Glass, Diana Khoi Nguyen, author of Ghost Of, and Alexandria Hall, author of Field Music. Then on August 4th at 7 p.m., we're looking forward to a conversation about fracking, environmental consequences, and community in Pennsylvania with Colin Gerald Mack, author of Up to Heaven and Down to Hell, Fracking, Freedom, and Community in an American Town, and Seamus McGraw, author of The End of Country, Dispatches from the Frack Zone. And on August 10th at 7 p.m. Eastern time, it's the last Hemingway Summer Poetry Series event of the year, featuring Veronica Corpuz, Richard Gegick, Monica Prince, Dan Shapiro, and Lawrence Ray. And you can find out more about these events and RSVP if they're online at whitewhalebookstore.com. So just a few brief notes and housekeeping on our Zoom settings. We will keep your video and audio off for the duration of the event so it's easier to focus on the writers. And we'll have a moment at the end for you to turn on your video and applaud. So stick around for that. The chat in the Zoom meeting will be activated for you to only message the host, which is me, and you will not have the ability to message other users or to post public messages. But I will send the chat log to our readers along with the other Zoom files, so if you want to send them nice notes or kind thoughts, please send them to me. And then for best viewing, we recommend hiding non-video participants, which means hiding all the black boxes. To do that, either click on view in the upper right-hand corner of the video section of the screen and click hide non-video participants, or right-click on your own black box and just do the same thing. Tonight, we will have Zoom's live closed captioning available, and you can toggle it on and off by clicking the CC button or the ellipses at the bottom of your screen. And now I'm just going to turn things over to our fabulous other host, Christopher Collins.
Hi everyone. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Just want to thank you all for coming out, listening to this reading, watching with us. As always, I want to thank White Whale Bookstore and of course Halsey, always great to get one more chance to work with Halsey before she goes off to Florida for MFA. We could not have done this season without White Whale partnering up with us to make it happen. It would have had to be canceled like our last season was. So really, when I say White Whale saved the Hemingway's Summer Poetry Series this year, that is not not hyping up White Whale there. They really did. We couldn't have done this without them. Their support and enthusiasm for the Hemingway series has just been wonderful for me and Joan to bask in. They're just so nice to us. And I want to thank Joan, of course, for letting me ride her coattails one more week. Eventually, she'll figure out I don't actually do anything and find a better partner. But until then, here I am giving you the intro. I'm going to keep it brief. I'm really excited about this reading. A lot of my favorite writers, both inside and outside of Pittsburgh, are reading tonight. This is a group I would have loved to have had in the back room at Hemingway's. A really fantastic bunch of writers. As far as my opening remarks today, I spent most of the day with my three-year-old son. So right before this reading, I was catching up on the January 6th insurrection goings on the Hill. So I'm looking forward to tonight to get my mind off that a bit. Some of the things I was reading put this Larry Levis poem to mind. So I'm going to read that by way of introduction tonight. Larry Levis, this poem is called Whitman, and it has an epigraph from Walt Whitman's Democratic Vistas. I say we had better look our nation searchingly in the face, like a physician diagnosing some deep disease. And this is the poem. On Long Island, they moved my clapboard house across a turnpike, and then felt so guilty they named the shopping center after me. Now that I'm required reading in your high schools, teenagers call me a fool. Now what I sang stops breathing. And yet, it was only when everyone stopped believing in me that I began to live again. First in the thin wine of Montana fence wire, then in the transparent cast-off garments hung in the windows of the poorest families. Then in the glad music of Charlie Parker. At times now, I even come back to watch you from the eyes of a taciturn boy at Malibu. Across the counter at the beach concession stand, I sell you hot dogs, Pepsis, cigarettes. My blonde hair long, greasy, and swept back in a vain old ducktail, deliciously out of style. And no one notices. Once he even came back as me, an aging homosexual who ran the tilt-a-whirl at county fairs, the chilled paint on each gondola changing colors that picked up speed, and a Mardi Gras tattoo on my left shoulder. A few of you must have seen my photographs, for when you look back, I thought you caught the meaning of my stare. Still water, merciless. A cosmos, one of the roughs. And Charlie Parker's grave outside Kansas City, covered with weeds. Leave me alone. A father who's outlived his only child. To find me now will cost you everything. Thanks. Let's get on with this reading.
Thank you so much for a fabulous introduction, Chris. Our first reader of the evening is John Grahalski.
Hello. I'm going to take my glasses off because I can see you with glasses when I'm looking here, but when I read, I have to take them off because middle age. I have a book that just came out this year called Eating a Cheeseburger During the End Times. Usually I try to read newer things, like newer than in a book, but COVID has not been my friend in terms of writing new poetry. So I'm going to read from the book tonight. And we had a conversation about dogs beforehand. So I think maybe this poem is going to be apropos of that, or whatever apropos means. It's called Hungover and Awakening to the Neighbor's Asshole Dog. Hungover and awakening to the neighbor's asshole dog, staring at me, then barking at me as I lift kitchen blinds. Coffeeless, with the scent of stale vodka and wine burning my nostrils. My head a cartography of potholes and fill in the blanks from the previous evening. The way it stands there, bouncing, yapping, cold black eyes, white Muppet face, owning my aural landscape until it condescends to forget me and take its shit. The mutt's owner shrugging down an apology while playing on his cell phone. I shut the blind and return myself into the pale gray blue of lightless linoleum. And know that while not all humans commit murder, all humans must surely understand the pure pleasure of murderous intent. To continue with my positive theme, I'm going to do a poem called The People in the Grocery Store Look Like Death Warmed Over. Spoiled vegetables and rancid meat are what we get for a long day of servitude. Long lines and bored cashiers playing on cell phones. Self-check machines for the post-industrial world dandy. Flat soda and stale bread. Warm beer by the caseload that will drink to insanity and bliss. The people in the grocery store look like death warmed over, coming home from work, to their common miseries and their self-inflicted wounds, microwave leftovers, and the dread faces of loved ones, rank capitalist, bound and gagged. I hate them, as I hate myself, for making each other suffer this way. And I'm gonna read a poem about the past. It's called Ghosts of Summer. Give me back the smack of wiffle ball bat on wiffle ball. The home run kings of cul-de-sacs surrounding duplex houses, playing 10 run rule. Or until it was all decided when the wiffle ball went rolling down the sewer. Give me back playing Nerf football in the shade with concrete gods, making Star Wars action figure plots right out of the humid, sweltering air. The sunsick joy of evermore romance that wouldn't last a week. Trading baseball cards on picnic benches like sweaty stockbrokers fearing a crash. Those suburban kids, those suburban girls, those ghosts of summer playing tag with the streetlights and fireflies, some of whom have died too young, some of whom have lived to grow as gray as I. Oh, give me back that freedom of faux innocence and blissful indecision, you petrifying wretch of time. The name of the book is called Eating a Cheeseburger During End Times, and I got the title from the last time that my wife and I went out and had food before everybody was sequestered and everything closed. So I'll read the title poem. Also, I don't know how long each reader has, I'll do a couple more and then I'll let you guys know when the final one's coming. Anyway, this is the title poem. It's called Eating a Cheeseburger During the End Times. The bar has most of its televisions turned to Fox Business Channel, except for ones playing a Mets Nationals game from last year. The men in the bar are watching the stock market crash again and again with as rapt attention as they would ESPN. Tomorrow the world is on lockdown. And this bar will be closed like thousands of others while we wait out the pandemic. But today is for eating a cheeseburger during the end times. As men in the bar complain about the money they'll lose on the stock market instead of maybe losing their health or their lives. Men seem to worry about the most trivial of things in times of crisis. A week ago, I was complaining about my job. Yesterday, I fought two people for the last loaf of bread and screamed into the void about the lack of toilet paper and black beans. And who in hell knows if I'll have a job to go back to? I probably should be indoors, making neighborly peace and hand sanitizing my soul, binge watching a world that now looks so foreign to me. But they make a damned good cheeseburger here, and it might be months, if ever, before I get to have it again. The bartender, Ross, is losing his job tomorrow. He just took a bath on his Disney stock an hour ago and got a text from his fiance that she lost her job right now. They were planning for a wedding in May. The unraveling is happening in real time, and there is nothing to do or say but just sit here and wait on it, except for some guy in an FDNY t-shirt who says, "The flu killed more people yesterday." Everyone laughs and nods silently. They go back to watching the stock market crash on TV, sucking up a trillion in government money. As I clear my second beer and turn to the year-old Mets national game, cheering when Juan Soto hits a double, a fool for move for sure, but forgetting all of this, if only for a moment. This is the second to last poem I'll read. So that means the one after this is the last one, then, isn't it? Barney sits outside the Indigo Tavern. Yes, it's another COVID-related poem. Barney sits outside the Indigo Tavern, like it's going to open any minute. He sits on the wooden bench that he's usually on, smoking his unfiltered cigarettes. He sits there like there's a new pint waiting for him inside and a Mets game on the TV. Like Phil is in there with his cheap scotch, Dennis with his cheap white wine and ice cubes. Barney sits there smiling like he's got a joke to tell Darlene. If he's lucky, he'll flirt with Jill. Barney sits outside checking his watch, but the Indigo has been closed for 3 months. As the pandemic raged on and on, the American flags outside the bar are yellow and drooping, tattered at their fringes. No one planted new flowers in the big stone plots. Bill caught COVID from watching Fox News, and Dennis is afraid to come outside. Darlene says that stimulus check didn't do her for shit, and the unemployment barely lets her slide by. Barney sits outside the Indigo Tavern on a bright sunny day in June, waiting like he always does, as a truck full of day laborers pull up to the curb and get out of a big red truck. They have ladders and toolboxes with them, saws and big planks of wood, a new padlock, a for rent sign, and the bright brass keys to the Indigo's classic front door. Let's see what we should do to end this. A surprise to me and a surprise to you. Okay, this is a very short one. It's called A Poem for Gray Clouds on a Fucked Evening after LiPo. The red faces of traffic on 75th Street and kids shouting invective in the park. In both, there is no lack of bullshit and violence. As the gray clouds follow me back to the liquor store, on another fucked evening where dignity and my liver are the cost of making it work here in Bootstrap America. Thank you.
Thank you so much, John. That was incredible. I'm very excited to turn things over to our second reader of the evening, Yona Harvey.
Hello. That was a phenomenal reading. Thanks everybody for being here. You couldn't hear us talking before, but even John's stories and comments are like poems to me. Thank you, Chris and Joan and Hemingway's and White Whale. Hemingway's invited me to read like when I didn't have a book to my name. And I always remember that Pittsburgh is a really great place to become a poet in. All right, I'm going to read from You Don't Have to Go to Mars for Love, because I also, if I were more organized, I could probably read new stuff, but I'm not ready. Okay, I grew up with pickles. I slept in the attic, cigarettes, sheets, laced with smoke. The heat of my father's brother's old room. Larry Blackman, Paint It for Effect, and Chaka Khan's Lips, More Like a Kiss, If a Kiss Could Walk, When It Came to Life. If a kiss could have hips and legs and ass, well, I wanted that. And if the colors could sweat and strip me down to my slip, well, I wanted that too. Nobody knew what I was thinking up there, though maybe they wanted that. Segregation Continuum, after Ella Baker and Glenn Ligon. Layered in black, on black, on white canvas, we who believe in freedom cannot rest. Looking at the way we look, looking forward, stepping back by way of upturned neck, by way of three steps back, looking black-coded, by way of black modes, by way of reconstruction, by way of insurrection, by way of colored fountains, by way of elected Democrats or elected aristocrats, it is obvious we are a presence, though we have been discomforted at school gates, at rental offices, at museum entrances. Even we cannot rest who believe in freedom. We are to some an irritant, an irksome, tiresome lot. We do not subscribe just because something comes out of a leader's mouth, out of the mouth of a tyrant. So we are too difficult. We are much too difficult. We are much too aware. We are much too marked. We are all that matter to us that matter. We are the most comforting presence by way of nod, by way of pound, by way of sup. We are always fashionable when we do not try. We do not try to insult except when we do, but we do not hesitate to speak of the things about which we agree or disagree. We participate at the level of our thinking, by way of our thinking, by way of our mass expression. We who believe in freedom cannot rest where once hundreds and even thousands of we ordinary people had taken a position that made us very uncomfortable when we decided, for instance, to walk rather than take the bus. And I'm gonna read this kind of rogue sonnet that I wrote for my daughter. Sonnet for a tall flower blooming at dinner time. Southern flower, I want to quote the bard, to serenade you, to raise a glass to you. Long and tall, you are always parched and hungry. You wobble in strong winds. You puff your bright hair when it rains. You toss off the lint of dandelions. You lean into the evening haunts with your indifferent afro. You were born in the old world city, the invisible dark girl city, the city that couldn't hold a candle, a straight pin, a slave owner's sins to you. You are the most beautiful dark that hosts the most private sorrows and feeds the hungriest ghosts. And I think I have time to read one more. So this will be the last poem. Dark and lovely after takeoff, a future. Nobody straightens their hair anymore. Space trips and limited air supplies will get you conscious quick. My shea buttered braids glow planetary as I turn unconcerned, unburned by the pre-takeoff bother. Leave it all behind, my mother told me. sweeping the last specks of copper thread from her front porch steps, and just as quick, she turned her back to me. Why had she disappeared so suddenly behind that earthly door? Our people have made progress, but perhaps, she'd said once, not enough to guarantee safe voyage to the great beyond, beyond where Jesus walked, rose, and ascended in the biblical tales that survived above sprocket-punctured skylines and desert-dusted runways jeweled with wrenches and sheet metal scraps. She'd no doubt exhale with relief to know ancient practice and belief died hard among the privileged too. Hundreds of missions passed and failed, but here I was strapped in my seat anticipating what exactly? Curved in prayer or remembrance of a hurt so deep I couldn't speak. Had that been me, slammed to the ground, cuffed, bulleted with pain as I danced with pain, I couldn't shake loose, even as the cops aimed pistols at me, my body and mind both disconnected and connected and unable to freeze, though they shouted, "Freeze," like actors did on bad television. They'd watched and thought they recognized me, generic or bland, without my mother, weeping like Mary, Ruby, Adela, Geneva, or Esther, stunned with the grief our own countrymen refused to see, to acknowledge or cease initiating, instigating, and even mocking in the social networks. Ignorant phrase bent and twisted like our DNA denied, but thriving and evident nonetheless. You better believe the last things I saw when far off lifted were Africa, 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 Africa. And though it pained me to say it sooner, the unmistakable absence of the Great Barrier Reef. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Yona, for such a beautiful reading. It was incredible. And our third reader of the night is Emily Moon Sleet.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much, Yona and John, for your poems. And thank you, Joan and Chris, for organizing this series and keeping it going virtually so beautifully throughout the summer. Thank you, Halsey, for hosting us and everyone at White Whale. And for those who don't know, I think Halsey mentioned it at the very beginning, this is their last reading that they're hosting before they move to Miami to start an MFA. So we're just really going to miss you in Pittsburgh, Halsey. So come back often. I'm thrilled to be reading with Yona, Lori, John, and William tonight, and I'm just really grateful to be here with all of you. I'm going to read a poem or two from The Falls, which came out last year. It's my first full-length book, and I'll also read a couple newer poems too. So I've been writing a bunch of new poems about technology, and this poem has an epigraph from an Arcade Fire song. Can we ever get away from the sprawl? People at yellow lights scrolling. People walking downstairs, tapping. People opening doors, clicking. People on toilets scrolling. Clicking my witching rod, pining for escape. People crossing streets, tapping. People watching kids climbing, clicking people. My pocket-sized trap door, what I touch most in a day. If everyone does it, it's okay. My fingers skitter like wings over 5-inch screens, jitter patterns through minutes. I used to pick up my head, look around. The sprawl is inside me now. People in meetings, scrolling, frowning. People weed whacking, clicking. People jogging, tapping. A guy who used to work for Facebook tells me, they know exactly how to hook you. Don't feel bad about being addicted. so I shouldn't feel guilty for texting when my friend is telling me a story, when my kids are yelling for help, when the light is yellow. People at stoves tapping, people on bikes scrolling, scrolling, people kissing, clicking, people clicking, scrolling, people tapping, clicking, people, I just have to check this one thing, scrolling, clicking, scrolling, people. My son tells me how he ends his bad dreams. I blink. Okay, so I'm also really interested in the invisibility of middle-aged women and mothers, and that's what drives this next poem. I've noticed that if a father is with his kids, especially carrying a baby in a baby carrier, he's essentially a god, but a woman is invisible. She's just doing what she's supposed to do. Building an arch at the science center. See how the mother hands her son the fake brick he needs, how she contorts her body to hold up the arch, how she reaches for another brick. Almost there, she says, and her back cracks. Come, see how she protects him from his discomfort. I'm hungry, he says, and now she is her too big purse. Band-aids for eyes, granola bar arms that lump in summer heat, a sticky, zippered mouth. See how her leg shivers to stay still as she searches for his snacks, how it burns, how she shifts her thigh bone back a perfect inch. Now she's a stone pillar. She's melted her human pieces into something stronger. Now he leans back harder into her leg, lets out a little breath, focused only on his work, trusting the pillar will hold. All right, a couple more poems. This one is from The Falls. And this poem was inspired by the kind of apocalyptic reality of flying across the country with my daughter alone when she was 6 months old. And she's just a kind of a wild kid, very, very physical, and kind of always was. And the title, Lightning Flowers, is another name for Lichtenberg figures. And if you've never heard of what that is, it's the tree branch-like shapes that occur on the skin of people who've been struck by lightning. Lightning flowers. My daughter is finally asleep in my throbbing arms. She grows roots that branch around my skin. The woman next to me on the plane, who let my wild baby grab her rings, lick the zipper of her purse, waving away my apologies, sleeps now too. On her tray table, her highlighted hair a perfect frosted cake. Lois, married 38 years to her second husband who died recently. He was a good one, she says, a really good one. It changes everything. Lois was surprised I have a second husband too. My first husband, a heavy bell still ringing. My second husband, clear light on green leaves. Maybe it was supposed to be this way. What do I know? In her sleep, my daughter clutches my shirt collar, the edge of a boat in her dream. Through the crack in the seats, I watch a movie, no sound. Tilda Swinton, Rafe, apologies for the sound. I don't know if you can hear. I'm in a beach house with 17 people. I watch a movie, no sound. Tilda Swinton, Rafe Fiennes, and two younger actors eat pretty food, give each other meaningful looks. Then some betrayal and they all go crazy. Tilda glides around in a white sheath, big aviators. Her sleeves billow like cool air, no baby to bounce. We coast into purple black clouds to a forest of lightning trees on the horizon. The last time I saw my first husband, he was wearing a wool jacket, Oxford shoes, living alone in a loft. Just the right amount of silver laced his beard. He seemed happy. I think about my husband at home, the one who said, "You deserve to be loved well." We fly into light, slashing the night skin, burning up the sky, and she wakes. I start bouncing again, sing "Twinkle, twinkle, little star" in her tiny ear, lightning cradling our plane. How I wonder what you are. Branches barreling down, the future, the most beautiful, terrible thing. Okay. So the next poem, the next one's a new one, and this comes from, and Chris actually published this one at Pittsburgh Poetry Review. So thank you, Chris, for giving this at home. Comes from my second poetry manuscript, which I'm very, very slowly writing. Which explores social media, attention, and parenthood. And hang on, I'm gonna put these headphones in because I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's happening out there, but there's 10 children in this house, so it's mayhem. I apologize. Ghost shape. "Mama, I need one more snuggle hug," she says, "even though you've read 3 books, changed her socks twice, found her Gruffalo doll, put a penny in her piggy bank, pulled her hair back in a ponytail, and watched as she ran and leapt onto the bed over and over and did a forward roll on the carpet. You're thinking how you were alone today for 8 minutes, a 4-minute shower, plus the time you lied and hid in the bathroom and scrolled Instagram while your husband broke up a fight. Now you're finally standing outside the door, your body half turned away. Just one more, mama, please. And in the nightlight's time-bending glow, you become the child in the bed, and your mother's ghost shape hangs in the doorway. And you just want one more reassurance against the dark. Mama, stay," she says, "and you stay a little longer. And later, while you load the dishwasher, you hope this tenderness erases your mistakes from today. The time you kept scrolling Twitter while she begged you to play. The time you growled in her face and grabbed her arm too hard and scared you both." Okay, and this next one's gonna be my last poem. Thank you all for your patience with the chaos in my house. I spent the last year teaching high school English, mostly in a hybrid mode, which if you don't know what that is, it means half of your students are physically present in the classroom with you, and then the other half of your kids are at home, you know, virtually on Zoom. And this poem comes out of that experience. And just a really quick note, the title of the poem is Chimerical, which means a fantastical or unrealizable dream. And that's derived from the chimera. If you're a Greek mythology nerd, then you'll know this. The chimera is a fire-breathing monster in Greek mythology that has a lion's head, a goat's body, and a serpent's tail. Chimerical. The brilliant student at the far side of the room raises her hand, a river of random sounds under her mask. I yell, "Can you say that again and really project?" We're 1 month into hybrid and I'm trapped in a corner of the room. My students are weary, waiting to be dazzled. "Tell us, what did you think of the poem?" I say. I wait. The in-person kids shift in their seats, avert their eyes. The virtual kids look down in their Zoom boxes, text each other, "Wait me out." I want to jump up and write on the whiteboard, rip off my mask, walk around the room without worrying if the kids at home can follow. I've become a robot chimera, lions calculating eyes, goats double laptop body, serpent's tail of winding cords. I'm ashamed of my form. Break time. In the hallway, I flip up my mask, guzzle water, slip a snack under the fabric, return to the classroom, trip over the cords, jerk them out of the wall again, make a self-deprecating joke, perch myself in front of two laptops, check input, output, speaker, place my head inside the square, unmute. I wave my hands when I talk, try to keep the kids at home awake with my wide open eyes, my nodding head. Everyone at home, give me a sign of life. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Emily. That was incredible. And our next reader of the evening is William Taylor Jr.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me. fellow readers are awesome. Thanks so much to the host and everyone that is here to take part. My cat just woke up and she might be a problem, so I'm going to put her in another room real quick. All right, sorry for that interruption. This is called Unacknowledged Legislators. The poets are drunk and they want you to know about it. The poets are sober and they want you to know about it. The poets are arguing on Facebook again. The poets love Charles Bukowski. The poets got a poem accepted and they want you to know about it. The poets got a poem rejected and they want you to know about it. The poets are posting their works in progress to all the social media sites, counting up the likes and shares like shiny coins. The poets are telling each other how wonderful they are. The poets are telling each other how horrible they are. The poets blacklist the poets they find problematic. The blacklisted poets blacklist the poets who blacklisted them in turn. The poets are reading for 5 minutes in their 3 minute time slot. The poets are working for social justice. The poets have no time for social justice. They're busy trying to harness the sorrow of the world with a few perfect lines. The poets are reporting each other on Twitter. The poets have a new chapbook and it's available now. The poets have only 3 copies left, so you'd better hurry. The poets hate Charles Bukowski. The poets are marching on City Hall or pockets stuffed with poems. The poets aren't getting out of bed for 3 days straight. The poets are flying out to AWP. The poets are starting a GoFundMe account to help pay their rent. The poets are starting a GoFundMe account to help pay their bills. The poets are starting a GoFundMe account to help fly them out to AWP. The poets are 5,637 words into their novel and they want you to know about it. The poets are waiting to hear from their agents. The poets are saints. The poets are prophets. The poets are liars. The poets are arguing on Facebook again. This is called The Dead. These days, the dead come around more and more with their warnings, their advices, their trails of crumbs. They make me nervous with their bravery and the terrible immensity of their freedom. More and more of the dead used to be my friends back when they were living. And now they know my secrets and all the things I never said. I don't sleep sometimes imagining their conversations and the gossip parlors of the void. It's Saturday night and the dead are here like they've nothing better to do, talking shit and singing songs. And I'm trying to write it down, but the dead keep telling me that is not what they meant at all. That is not it at all. Everybody always talks about the silence, but it's 3 a.m. I'm nearly out of wine and the dead just won't shut up. This is called The People in the Books I'm Reading. I'm at the computer with my wine and there's a man outside my building calling the name of someone he'll never see again. as a drunk poet send me messages telling me how they're sad about their latest poems not getting enough likes or shares, and how they're sad about their unrecognized genius and their unreviewed books. One tells me of an old lover's suicide as she spills wine across faded letters. Another hasn't slept for days. She says she's enslaved by the phases of the moon. Eddie's muse has skipped town and Ginny's scared about 30 days in rehab. Anna stopped drinking and found God. This time she tells me for good. And Frank's checking himself into the psych ward and they took his dog away. Angry Face is mad because I haven't read his manuscripts. And the people in the books I'm reading, they're all setting things on fire and committing suicide. It's a bad night all around and I can't do much for any of it. I'm sad too. I have my own dead lovers and unreviewed books. And now they're putting the guy outside into the back of a car as I gaze into the flashing lights and pour another wine. When I sit down to answer one of the sad messages, I tell my poet friend not to worry so much. They'll cancel us all eventually. This is called Empty is the New Black. For a long time, I lived in the Tenderloin neighborhood of San Francisco until very recently, which is kind of considered the bad neighborhood. And, you know, there's a lot of homelessness and drug addiction, but it's also one of the liveliest neighborhoods in the city. This is kind of about drinking beer in the Tenderloin. Empty is the new black. The day crumbles and fails, and we're half-assed Christ nailed to the cross of whatever's left of things. We drink beer in the Tenderloin, we grimace beneath the sun. The great American loneliness drips from the walls of the sad hotels where the poets fuck and die. And the latest thing we thought would save us, we burnt through it in a day. There's a guy with a boombox strapped to his bicycle playing music from another world where you could still imagine something other than the dreariness at hand. There's a man on a corner leaning on the liquor store. He's got enough losing tickets scattered at his feet to build some kind of kite or boat and get the hell away from here. This is my second to last one. It's called, If Your Loneliness Were a Flag, You Could Wave It. If your loneliness were a flag, you could wave it high above your conquered lands. If it were a car, you could paint it metallic blue and drive it over the cliffs of hell into a fiery sea. If it were a ship, you could fly it into the heart of the sun. If your loneliness were God, you could curse it or petition for mercy. If it were a stranger, you could turn it away at the door. If it were a heart, you could stop it. If your loneliness were love, you could steel yourself to it. Toss its letters unopened into the trash. If it were a law, you could break it or strike it down. If it were a house, you could set it aflame and watch it glow from distant hills. If your loneliness were your mother, you could pack your things and run away, make it suffer for the years of pain. If it were a ghost, you could banish it back to the nether realms with a spell or a charm. But your loneliness is a song and you have an ugly voice. And the neighbors complain every time you try and sing. And this is my last one, thank you. This is kind of my my lockdown poem. One of them anyway, called Bored with Rimbaud. The plague has settled in like a dumb gray fog. And we're all just waiting around for someone to open up the world again. I'm bored with Rimbaud, bored with drink, and bored with no drink. Outside, there's a sliver of a moon, and people more useless even than myself are shuffling through the dark towards destinations sinister and banal. And the things that used to save me have faded, and even music seems emptied of magic. My incantations won't resurrect my love. The bones just rattle and creak and go quiet again. And the doctors and politicians say the cure is on the way, but who knows what will be left of us. The silence of the night breathes like something alive. And I toss aside Rimbaud and go back to Baudelaire. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, William. And it is with my greatest pleasure to introduce our final reader of the evening, Lori Wilson.
Hi, everyone. I'm waiting for the gray line to disappear. Thank you very much, Joan and Chris, for putting this series together and for inviting me to read in this amazing group of poets. John and William, I'm very happy to meet you for the first time. I've never heard any of your poetry. It was quite a pleasure. And Emily and Yona, pleasure to hear you read again. I'm going to begin in the heat of summer since we're there. Oh, and I'm reading from my book. On White Avenue, a maple leaf drifted to the broken sidewalk. You know the place, past First Ward School, where AA meets now. But before the crest of the hill, before the road narrows, so only one car can pass at a time. It was 93 degrees. Everything that could grew a green riot along that road when this single leaf fell. Along its veins, yes, still bright green, but yellow taking over toward the edge, brown spot widening on one lobe. Though the leaf remained supple and glittered as if sprinkled with its own sugar, I couldn't say if it was sweet. I didn't touch it with my tongue. Even now on my bed, as it curls its increasingly papery skin, flecks of light. Here on a vein, here where brown is a pond in a yellow field, here where one tip begins to bleed red. This next poem questions a sign I saw posted in front of the Spruce Street Church. Empty is good. Empty like a dishwasher ready for loading, or empty like a cupboard and the paycheck spent. Empties the flattened box in the trash, the boarded house on Kingwood condemned, roof a sluice, yard a sea. I mean, echo, hollow, a hike on the freeway at night, hauling a red plastic can. Empties the bed where grief sleeps. Bag without ballast, easily pierced by a twig. In the end, empty caves in. If I tell you I'm empty, I'm telling you, feed me. And when I say feed me, I really mean stay. Make of your broad back a shield. Hold me up with your practical hands. I'm all out of muscle, vision, grit. Stay. And prayer is one kind of faith. Dear black polished table, last night, a bird I'd never heard became a baby's colicky wail. It wasn't the baby's distress pinned me all night to the window, dear black, but the bone-weary mother I wanted to rock, only I was afraid. And wasn't I once a girl in charge? Dear childhood desk, at least give me that. And then I was lying, and then I stopped speaking. Still as August air. And stillness is another kind of faith, an empty kiln fire jar at the bottom of which might be my name. Sumac shadow, I waited, and watching your slow leafy wave, I believed that some things are harmless. Dear moon, yellow moon, full right on schedule. I'm the one in the red fleece jacket down here on the sidewalk, relieved to see your pocked face. This next poem references an art installation piece by Nathaniel Lewis from his show Bigger Than You. Possibly slower. I would rub dry husk against bark, slither out larger. Can a person create a self from what confines her? I saw a giant bear seated on a gallery floor. Stuffing spilled from a gash where a tiny bear sewed itself of cloth torn from the big bear's belly. If I resist the day, is that lazy? The energy required to act is large. I know. Patience, industry, diligence, etc. My poinsettia's leaves turn red long after Christmas. Possibly slower doesn't equal lazy. Across the field, the gray house, its evolution took years. Even now, the addition's part yellow, the boundary crooked where yellow meets gray. My mother got a lot of things wrong, but when I was a kid and afraid I'd swallow a straight pin, she didn't laugh. She helped me make a plan, something to do with eating bread to coat the pin, then visiting Dr. Hofmeister. So that's something. I can't say I loved her, but there was that straight pin thing and the time she bought paint so I could make a mural on my wall. Also, the smocked christening dress for the baby and a few other things I've had 15 years to remember. I don't believe in an afterlife, and yet I say the owls and foxes in my dreams are her. And maybe the red wool coat I tried on at Goodwill was hers. I rub oil of Olay into my skin just to smell her, and wear her pearls to feel one small weight she lifted, fight the fishhook clasp she fastened around her neck. Okay, this is my two poem announcement. I'm not gonna say warning. I always went back to the same place. Downhill and up past the shed, left and left where the logging road forks, right at the meadow, the path's steep drop. When I found it again, I scrambled half slid to the flat, pushed through rhododendron to stone and light, the river a ribbon below. I lay down and pressed my bare back against heat. I always return to the same place, wanting what? This certain light, these red tails drifting, this pair of box turtles, corydalus growing from a crack in the rock. I went back. I liked best to see no one. I went back for the full moon rise, and when days cooled so the rattlers sought sun in the path, I went back. A few admissions. I'm trying not to lie anymore. Mostly, I speak less. It'd be easier if I could be sure of the truth. Today, I'm the gutter sagging across the street, not quite enough. Maybe a bird's nest, maybe a clot of wet leaves weighed it down. Below it, the wind has swept a small pile against the yellow curb. The mailman shuffles envelopes pulled from his bag, slides them into a box. I like to imagine they're letters, not bills. I had the idea to pick up a seed or a leaf or a stone on each daily walk. Set it on the table, maybe sketch it, maybe even in color. I'm trying to get closer to truth. So far, I haven't picked up anything. Last night, I was trying to remember the music I'd loved on Chestnut Ridge. I didn't want to make up that story and filled my living room with Mozart, Copland, Gershwin. The shock of it in the silence, the sudden urge to bow down. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lori. Before we do our big round of applause, I'm gonna turn things over to Joan for a final comment of the evening.
Well, I really wanna thank, I just wanna thank the poets so much. It is just a joy to be able to hear your work. I am thrilled that be able to have you, that you are here together and we can hear each other and hear voices we haven't heard together before. A big thanks to White Whale, of course, to Halsey, we're gonna miss, and to Chris, with whom I could not have done this, who has just brought so much to the series, because he knows so many folks who I do not know, and he knows how great they are. And so we've done this together. Don't let him tell you anything else. So I really appreciate it so much. It was so great to hear the Larry Levis poem. It was so great to hear about wiffle ball, about daughters and mothers in Africa, to hear about Tilda Swinton, to hear about the dead that are always with us. And the great American loneliness, which I think we've learned even more about, and meditations on the afterlife. And I was really, I was really interested in that line, we always return to the same place. And we do kind of always return to the same place. Wow, what a great reading. There's gonna be a chance to hear this all again. If you go on Hemingway's poetryseries.blogspot.com, you can hear in a few days, we'll have this posted and you can see little snapshots and you can actually hear all of this again and the last 10 years also. But before I say goodnight, I want to just call out and remind everybody, because this came up tonight too, we're trying to do a weekly, bi-weekly reminder to people about nightlifeline.org, which is running a fundraiser for food, beverage, and entertainment workers, which was co-founded by Rich Gedzik, who is going to be reading in 2 weeks, and they have raised about $51,000. I think they're starting to dispense funds, and this is help for with rent and utilities and hospital bills for stagehands, cooks, baristas. Nightlifeline.org, and I'll send out a reminder. And if you can share something with them, they are starting to. They're starting in the process of being able to disperse some money. And we can hear more in 2 weeks. 2 weeks we come back, and we do come back with Veronica Korpuz and Rich Gedzik and Monica Prince and Dan Shapiro and Lawrence Ray. And as Jimmy would say, you have honored poetry And it is a joy to be able to be together in this way. And hopefully we can be together in another way sometime soon. Thank you all so much. Good night.
I just want to invite everybody for just a quick round of applause before we say goodbye. So you can turn on your cameras. Yes. And just show yourselves and unmute yourselves. We can just laugh together. We have such an incredible night. Yes, everybody come to the Hemingway series in 2 weeks. Thank you so much, everybody. I hope you have a fabulous night. Thank you.
Thank you all.